Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Two Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Two Jewish is paid for by Two Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's Memorial Day weekend, the real beginning of summer in most parts of our country, including right here in Tucson, Arizona, in the Sonoran Desert where I live. Now, summer doesn't officially begin until June 21st, but in many parts of the country, like here, it really starts with this Memorial Day weekend. Kids are out of school, temperatures rise, it begins to feel like the season of sun, water, and freedom. That's how I remember it from childhood, when the last days of public school signaled total release from responsibility. Ah, that blissful last day of school. I believe that in my memory it may have been more pleasurable than the summer vacations that followed. Sometimes it's the idea of freedom that matters the most. For working people, summer is not vacation at all, but there's a certain sense around an American synagogue, particularly among religious school families, that they are taking the summer off from Judaism, and they'll see again when school starts in the fall. I don't know at what point people began to feel Judaism was a 9-month-a-year experience, but somehow that message has been communicated in congregational life. In nearly every American Reform, conservative, progressive synagogue, and there are definitely families we will not see again until August. I don't know what to do about this exactly, and neither does anybody else in the shul business. It's not that we don't preach the message that Judaism is a year-round commitment, a way to experience holiness in life every day. And I don't think it's a conscious decision people make to avoid Judaism when the weather warms up. It's just that somewhere along the way, American Jews learned or decided that religion, or at least Judaism, was a pediatric exercise for most, something to give to kids to make sure they got the right values, holidays, and rituals, and hopefully married the right flavor of person. And that they themselves, their parents, and even their grandparents were exempt from actually experiencing the same things that they require their kids to do. That's why the best supplemental religious schools in the world, and many of ours are very fine, can only do so much. Children learn and know prayers and holidays, chant from the Torah, sing about Israel and the festivals, celebrate their wonderful Jewish identity, but when parents drop kids off and split for a free morning and don't model positive Jewish behaviors or provide sufficient Jewish experiences regularly at home, it sends a strong message. Judaism is just kid stuff. Grown-ups have more important things to do, like work out, go shopping, meet friends, fix the house, and otherwise participate in not Jewish activities. Now, that's not what rabbis preach, of course, but it certainly is a message that comes across loud and clear, especially in the summertime, which means no religious school, which equals no Judaism. Of course, if kids are going to Jewish camps, they will get a very full, complete experience of living Judaism. And frankly, they love it. But if they are not going to a Jewish camp and the families don't come to temple, a wonderful opportunity is missed. During the more relaxed pace of summer, we can all experience some of the very best parts of Jewish life more fully. The home celebration of Shabbat dinner, the opportunity to talk about and study Torah creatively in a less pressured environment. when kids don't have to rush from choir rehearsal to ballet to baseball practice to debate to student government to karate, they can actually experience life at a more human pace. And if you take the trouble to have them shut down their iPhones and social media for a little while and enjoy real family time, it creates space to explore and enhance your families and your relationship with our magnificent Jewish tradition. Well, to remind us of just how enjoyable Shabbat can be in temple and at home, here's Chazan Aaron Ben Susan's wonderful Echad Odi to play us in this morning on Too Jewish. That was Aaron Ben Susan's Lechad Odi, a reminder to come to Shabbat services this summer. Say at our synagogue, Beit Simcha, 6:30 p.m. every Friday night, 9 a.m. Torah study on Saturday, 10 a.m. Shabbat morning services. As I mentioned earlier, this is Memorial Day weekend, once a solemn and serious time to commemorate our war dead. Now, maybe not so much. It's true that the contemporary observance of Memorial Day has declined to the point that it represents not much more than a long weekend to start holding barbecues and pool parties, to shop for bargains, to head off for a mini vacation. But that's actually a shame, for remembering our honored dead is a moral responsibility and it has great resonance in Jewish tradition. The American Memorial Day started in 1866 in New York State, just a year after the end of the Civil War. Communities began to observe Decoration Day to honor the dead of that terrible conflict. Within a couple of years, observance had become national and near universal, a sign of the broad sense of loss that the devastating American Civil War caused. While the American Memorial Day dates from the 1860s, the idea of having a time to remember and honor the dead is typical of Judaism and has been so for many hundreds of years. Four times a year, we Jews observe a special service called Yizkor, remembrance, that allows all of us who have lost loved ones to gather and remember their lives and their meaning in our lives. This happens on Yom Kippur, on Sukkot, on Pesach, and on Shavuot, whose Yizkor service we observed just yesterday. Israel knows a great deal about Memorial Day. They observed it a month or so ago on Yom HaZikaron, the day just before Yom HaAtzmaut, the Israeli Memorial Day immediately preceding Israeli Independence Day. It's a sharp reminder of the high price that Israelis paid and continue to pay for their independent, free, democratic nation. This next song is a classic song about friends. The words are by the great Israeli poet Chaim Guri. He wrote them after the War of Independence, the Milchemet Shechrur, about those who were with us in war and are gone now. It's a modern recording by Harel Scott. The words about Israel's military dead, well, they are universal. They are gone from our midst, all their laughter, their youth, and their splendor. But we know that a friendship like that we are bound all our lives to remember. For a love that in battle is forged will endure while we live, fierce and tender.
Al ha-negev yored leil ha-stav U'matzit kochavim cheresh-cheresh Et ha-ruach over al ha-saf Ananim mehalchim al ha-derech כבר שנה לא הרגשנו כמעט איך חלפו הזמנים בשדותינו כבר שנה ונותרנו מעט מרבים שאינם עוד בינינו אך נזכור כי ראות שכזאת
On this Memorial Day weekend, take a few moments to remember the debt we owe to all of those who died protecting our country and the freedom we enjoy, including the precious freedom of conscience that allows us to practice our own religion fully. Our guest on Too Jewish this morning, Diane Bregner, is the author of a new novel, The Royal Coconut Beach Lunch Club. She's written a unique and enjoyable summer read. Meet her when she joins us in a moment on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the Too Jewish, our guest this morning, Diane Bergner's first novel is Royal Coconut Beach Lunch Club. She's Vice President of Development at the Raymond F. Kravis Center for the Performing Arts in West Palm Beach, Florida. And this is, I guess, I don't know, is this a new career, a second career? Tell us about how you got into this.
Well, I love the word encore career because could be my encore career, but I am still happily employed at the Raymond F. Kravis Center as the Vice President of Fundraising, as you mentioned. And I've always loved writing, and I've always wanted to write, and I'm passionate about philanthropy and fundraising. So I sort of merged, my careers are merging in a way. So now I have two big careers going on. What can I say?
Well, that's great. It can't be an encore if you're still doing your first. You're taking bows in two directions, I would say.
Yes. I'm cheating on both.
Well, there's a little bit of cheating in your book, too. Tell us about that.
Well, the premise of the book is a lawyer turned high society fundraiser navigates the thicket of the ultra rich. And the deeper she gets, reality and fantasy increasingly blur together. And then her marriage starts to get shaken, especially when JJ, an Argentinian billionaire, pursues her. And, you know, the grass looks greener on the other side. So, a lot of romance in it, but mystery as well and office drama.
Sex, romance. What more could you want from a summer book, huh?
Absolutely. It's a great summer read. But I will say, you know, I know it's called a beach read, but the lessons are deep. Just because it's light and fluffy and lots of fun and entertaining, you could still learn a lot. And that was my premise. Originally, I was writing a nonfiction book about fundraising. And then I said, you know what? Nobody really wants to read that, and I wanted to shine a light on fundraising in a fun way, so that's how it began.
You know, I learned a lot about many things from this book, makeup, clothing, stuff that I just don't know about. You know a lot about that stuff.
Well, you have to learn quickly. I mean, there's galas and gossip and cocktail parties and corruption, and that part is true.
Sounds a little bit close to home here, doesn't it?
Close to home, but it's all fiction. In fact, members of our board have read it and said, boy, that book was terrific. I'm trying to figure out who's who, but I really can't. And I said to them, you won't, because it's fiction. But it's based, you know, look, writing fiction is based on reality always, you know,
sure.
Even an artist,
sure.
You know, you paint a canvas, blue is blue. You don't change the color, but how you apply it is what's creative and made up. So you get to make this big splash with make-believe when you write. It's the same kind of thing. But I do draw inspiration from some of the colorful characters I've met.
I would expect so. We will talk much more with Diane Bergner. Her book is Royal Coconut Beach Lunch Club. It's a fun novel and worth the read when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, is a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson, the Catalina Foothills. We celebrate a great array of services, classes, and events this spring and summer. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in Northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. We have a wonderful religious school for school-aged children or grandchildren. You can join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tykes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to everyone in person Friday night and Saturday morning services. Shabbat evening celebration services are at 6:30 p.m. with full music. Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m. Torah study precedes them at 9 a.m. You can come on person or go to services on Facebook. Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha Tucson is our Facebook page. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. Our wonderful religious school is available in blended format, too. Some students live, some on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, our great religious school and Torah Tykes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, and the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of Southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or a criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O JewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store, is a very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in America. According to Moment Magazine, 200,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating. Please review 2 Jewish wherever you listen. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You are back not too long ago from a journey to Europe. And
less than a week, in fact.
Well, there you go. And one of our mutually favorite places, Thessaloniki, the former Jewish capital of the Eastern Mediterranean. It's a beautiful place, fascinating place. Tell us what happened this time.
Well, so that for me was the last stop of my trip. And I flew back from Thessaloniki through Munich and San Francisco to Tucson. And it was a long day.
That's a long trip.
I intentionally scheduled comfortably safe connections both in Munich and in San Francisco so that I wouldn't be stressed.
Yep.
But in Thessaloniki, I have some very old friends that I've seen almost every year since 1973. And in some cases, when I lived in Sofia, Bulgaria, I would see them once a month because it was the closest place to buy fruits and vegetables in the winter. Thessaloniki is called by Ladino speakers La Madre de Israel, the mother of Israel.
Wow.
Because it had so many Jews at one time. Now, the Jews were never more than 50% of the population, but it was a population made up of minorities. And there were Turks and Albanians and Bulgarians and Macedonians and Greeks and Armenians and Jews. And so my friends live in an apartment building where if you look at the name list with like the door buzzers when you're standing on the street, you can see that there are clearly Jews in the building. There's a family named Cohen. There are clearly some Armenians. There are some Greeks. And there's even one Anglo-Saxon with like named Murphy or something. Hmm. So it's a very diverse city.
Still pretty diverse.
Always has been. And they recently added a Ladino course to the local university there, which is the Aristotle University, which produced Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, who brought us
vaccine. Coronavirus. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So my friend Jackie is the professor of Ladino. He does it on a voluntary basis. And he's got 17 students, of whom only one is Jewish, and the other 16 are non-Jews who are interested in Thessaloniki's history and this aspect of the fact that at one point, 40% of the city spoke Ladino as a primary language, and a lot of other, like another 40% as a secondary language when they went shopping in the marketplace, which was all controlled by Jews, fruits, vegetables, fish, cheese, whatever. So the Jews had enough clout to cause the port of Thessaloniki to be closed on Shabbat and Jewish holidays, starting like 3 hours before sundown the night before. And banks and major department stores and stuff were always closed on Jewish holidays and on Shabbat. And it's probably the only city in Europe where that is true. In English, I think it was called the Jerusalem of the Balkans. But in Ladino, La Madre de Israel.
La Madre de Israel. I love that.
And what was interesting is, once again, as we went around, we heard a lot of Serbian. And in one case, I was mistaken. The table was maybe 15 feet away from us. There's a family of four. Very attractive, two young sons, like 10 and 12, and a mother and father. And the father was like 6'9 and looked like a professional basketball player. And I thought they were speaking Serbian, so I went up to them, as is my wont, and I said, "So where are you from in Serbian?" And they said, "We're from Slovenia, but we understand Serbian, so go ahead." And then, you know, when they said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Arizona," they said, "Oh, we've been there." And then they switched into English. Their English was fluent.
It always amazes me, so many places around the world, you have these people who speak better English than the people in Tucson or
this family
American
has been
show.
To 45 American states.
Wow.
Which is far more than most Americans, maybe even more than you.
No, but getting close to me.
Right. I mean, well, it's impressive for a family from Slovenia that only vacations in the U.S.
That's crazy.
To have visited that many states.
Wow.
And it was kind of a memorable and very pleasant encounter. But again, every interaction in Thessaloniki with a waiter or a bartender or the hotel front desk was just so gracious and so hospitable in a way that really, even in fine dining restaurants, you just don't find here anymore. I mean, you did back in the 50s or 60s when I was a kid.
We're sounding like old guys now, Tom, I got to tell you. But no, I think you're right. I think there's been a loss of that civility. And By the way, that doesn't mean that Europeans won't still shoot each other. They just do it in war. They don't do it in restaurants.
Right, right. Fair point.
Tom, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Zadie lies dying. His pulse is thready, his breathing labored. The children and grandchildren stand around his bed waiting for the end. And now, as the time for departure draws near, a wonderful smell wafts upstairs from the kitchen below. Zadie's eyes flicker open. A smile creeps across his drawn and tired face. "I smell your Bubby's rugelach baking," he says weakly. "What a smell! Those are the most delicious pastries in the world. Oy, what I would give for one last taste. Please, Avramela, go get me one to eat, one of her rugelach, then I can die happy." His grandson is quickly dispatched to the kitchen, but after a few minutes returns empty-handed. "What's wrong?" Zadie asks feebly. "Where's the rugelach?" And the grandson answers, "Bubby says they're for the Shiva." You see, the Shiva is the meal of condolence after a funeral. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we chant the second portion of the book of Numbers, Naso, which includes a remarkable blessing, the Birkat Kohanim, the priestly blessing, really three distinct brachot, three separate prayers. It's the way the ancient priests were commanded to bless the people of Israel. From its inception, this three-part blessing had exceptional importance. The Torah quotes God as saying, "With this blessing you will place my name on the people of Israel, Samu et Shemi." That is, this very blessing conveys God's presence among us and offers God's protection. The blessing was given by the Kohanim, the highest class of priests, those entrusted with the service of the tabernacle and then the temple. We still use this blessing at every joyous life cycle event, and it remains powerful. The text is, "May God bless you and guard you. May the light of God's presence shine on you and be gracious to you. May God's presence turn to you and grant you peace." In essence, the Birkat Kohanim asks God to supply our most important needs. The majority of the interpretations of this see the first blessing as a request for physical safety and health, the second asking for our material needs to be satisfied, and the third part of the blessing, I guess the third blessing really, seeking spiritual comfort and confidence for us. Without any one of these blessings, our lives can be challenging indeed. But with all three, we are assured of true quality of life. You know, after thousands of years, those three elements, safety, grace, and peace, remain central to our lives and a true gift from God. May you be blessed with each of these, with all of these, this week of the Torah portion of Naso, and always. When we come back in a moment, our guest this morning, Diane Bregner, explains how murder crept into her new summer novel, almost against her will. Find out how that happened. Come back in a moment on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The Biden administration revealed its new national anti-Semitism strategy last week. It included four separate pillars: addressing increasing awareness and understanding of both anti-Semitism and Jewish American heritage, improving safety and security for Jewish communities, reversing the normalization of anti-Semitism and addressing anti-Semitic discrimination, and building coalitions across all communities to fight hate. The strategy, which took 6 months to formulate and took input from a wide variety of Jewish leaders and groups, is designed to combat rising anti-Semitism in the United States over the last several years. Timed to coincide with the conclusion of American Jewish Heritage Month. Boy, there are a lot of heritage months nowadays, aren't there? The anti-Semitism strategy seeks to address a nation, America, where anti-Semitic acts have increased by something like 35% over the past year or so, and where nearly all Jews now say they are concerned about anti-Semitism in the United States. The only controversy related to this new policy initiative revolves around the relationship between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. There was great debate about whether or not to use the international definition of anti-Semitism, which includes attacking Israel's existence as an anti-Semitic set of acts. The National Anti-Semitism Strategy includes over 200 policy plans and recommendations for combating anti-Semitism. We certainly hope that these are implemented rapidly and prove to be effective. In other news, one of the most polarizing figures in American Jewish history, former Secretary of State and National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger, turned 100 years old last week. Kissinger served the Nixon and Ford administrations in the late 1960s and 1970s. He was both celebrated and reviled for his role in expanding and then ending the Vietnam War. He was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for a peace agreement with the North Vietnamese that did not last. And he led the strategy that resulted in the U.S. opening relations with Mao's China, then crafted most of the détente policy with the Soviet Union as well. And while Nixon initially and deliberately kept Kissinger and all Jews in his administration out of Middle East strategy and relations with Israel, that changed with the Yom Kippur War. Kissinger manipulated everyone and every situation, of course, and he and Nixon were crucial to the airlifting of a huge amount of military supplies that allowed Israel to both survive and then turn the tide on the Egyptian and Syrian armies in 1973. Kissinger also secretly delayed the ceasefire agreement's implementation in the Yom Kippur War until Israel could finish gaining the upper hand on Syria and was approaching Damascus, and it could encircle the Egyptian army. Both of those actions gave it a much stronger negotiating position. And it was Kissinger who began and shepherded the delicate and complicated process of moving Israel and Egypt towards the long-lasting peace that wasn't completed until the Carter administration took office. And while he was very obviously Jewish, that identity never seemed to impact Kissinger's policy decisions much. Kissinger and the Nixon and Ford administrations actively discouraged Senator Henry Scoop Jackson's efforts to link trade with Russia to freeing Soviet Jews, believing that détente was more likely to result in changes in the Soviet system than putting political or economic pressure on Moscow. While some Jews did get out in the 1970s, including some famous refuseniks, it wasn't until the Reagan and Bush administrations 15 years later that Jews were finally able to flee the former Soviet Union in large numbers. Perhaps the most famous American Jewish figure of the 1970s, Henry Kissinger, is still around and still writing op-eds today at the age of 100. And he's still controversial. A high school state championship in basketball may not seem like a big deal in America, a nation in which there are 50 states and multiple categories of schools in almost all of them. but two small Jewish day schools winning state titles in basketball the same year. In fact, the same month. In fact, nearly the same week. Well, that's a pretty big deal. This spring, we say Mazel Tov to Shel Hevet, an Orthodox Jewish high school of 260 students in Los Angeles that won the California Women's Division IV basketball state championship. And we also say Mazel Tov to the Denver Jewish Day School boys basketball team, who were Class 1A state champions, the first ever crown for this pluralistic Jewish community, K-12 day school. May there be many more such championships to come. And that's the news of Jews round the world. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Diane Bergner's book is Royal Coconut Beach Lunch Club. It's her first novel. She is the Vice President of Development at the Raymond F. Kravis Center for the Performing Arts in West Palm Beach, Florida. She is, by the way, also a lawyer. You didn't get to be a doctor, but you sure covered a lot of other bases. As somebody who does kind of exactly this in West Palm Beach, development is a very interesting thing. And without giving away too much about the book, there are very, as you noted earlier, colorful characters involved. Is there ever one formula for how you approach people? Because in the book, it seems like everybody's very vivid, let's say.
Well, yes, people are very vivid. And one of the things that I love about my job, so to speak, are the people I get to meet. And fundraising is a relationship-driven business, very much so. And it's not, people say, oh, I could never ask for money. Well, I don't ask for money. I build relationships and gain trust.
Right.
And, you know, and then the impact that people can make by giving money to anything, in my case, an art center, becomes very meaningful. So I do get to know people, you know, in a very close personal way. And if that means, you know, going to a lot of lunches, so be it. But look, we're right in across the bridge from Palm Beach. And there's so many captains of industry and, yes, lots of billionaires. And they've all lived very intriguing, colorful, as you say, lives. So certainly they provide inspiration. They're success stories.
I would figure that there's a few Jews where you live there, and some of them must be related to the work that you do for the Performing Arts Center. Are there Jewish characters per se in your book?
There are, and I was careful. You know, I didn't want it to be one way or the other. There's in fact, you know, Palm Beach used to be very different, and it's become more of, and when I say Palm Beach, I'm talking about the island, it has become more Jewish. And Palm Beach County itself has a huge Jewish population, and a lot of our donors are, in fact, Jewish. Our board of directors is very mixed, and that's intentional because we want to represent all communities. And, you know, there's different clubs. There's a point of inflection, I guess, in my book when Julia, the main character, is at an all-Gentile country club. And the donor says to her, you know, are you Jewish? And she looked around and felt very uncomfortable because it was an all-Gentile club. And the donor says to her, well, we're all united by one God. And I thought that that was a nice way to put things. You know, we are all unified, and same with our donors. We're all supporting the same cause.
It seems to me that Palm Beach had a stereotype of being not only not Jewish, but I don't know, was it ever restricted? I mean, that wasn't where the Jews were in that part of Florida. Was that true at one point?
From my understanding, yes. And from my understanding, anti-Semitism existed. But I think, again, I'm a New Yorker. And
I could never have told from you're never been able to tell from your accent, of course.
I didn't think you could. Actually, born and raised in Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn, New
York. Mecca of the world.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, but I've been here for 27 years, and I've seen the community evolve in a big way, and not just the community, but the island, Palm Beach as well. And especially now, the influx of New Yorkers who are coming to Palm Beach and buying mansions, it is just, it's becoming, how do I say this, a melting pot, so to speak? In a way, I mean, that's just my observation, but I think if the data would support that as well. So
back to the book, you know, it wouldn't be a great summer book if there wasn't a murder, I think, right? In developing that, how did you do the research for it? Did you go out and kill somebody? I mean, I just need to know.
No, honestly, it evolved. I didn't expect it to be a mystery or have a murder / question mark suicide in it.
Right. Sorry, I didn't want to give anything away. I apologize.
It wasn't part of the overall plot. In fact, I didn't really adhere to an outline. I had an idea of where the book was going, but the twists and the turns, they actually surprised me, which made it that much more enjoyable to write. You know, there's the creativity. As you mentioned, I was a lawyer once upon a time in New York. And, you know, law school and lawyering, they train you to think logically and methodically and analytically. But with the fiction writing, I get to just go wild with the creativity. And then I have to bring it down again and make it very organized in a succinct way. So the part that you're talking about, the murder, the mystery, that was totally unexpected. And I just went to town on that whole thread and subplot. So, and then I got to organize it in a way that it was all woven together and made sense.
What was the most difficult thing about writing this, your first novel?
Honestly, having time, because I have a full-time career. Just finding the time. And I had to develop an approach that worked for me. And I am very disciplined. And I would wake up at 4:35 in the morning and write for a few hours. I stopped exercising, to be honest. But I got my writing done and when I'm fresh in the morning. And then before I knew it, it was 7-8 o'clock and it was time to go to work. So really, finding the time to do it. I don't want to say staying motivated. I was always very motivated to get to the finish line. And then having to edit it was the more difficult than the writing of it. to me, the actual writing was fun. The editing became drudgery, and the rewrites, and to make that perfectly polished manuscript, that was the toughest part. And finding time for that, too, dovetailing to what I just said before this.
Sure. And obviously, like, creating, completing a novel is a major accomplishment. Mazel tov, by the way. I should have started with that. What was the most surprising part about it?
Most surprising part was how difficult the journey is overall. And yes, I could have just put it on Amazon and self-published, but I didn't want to go that route. So the whole publishing journey, and even now I am on social media, which I was always against, really, because I'm in such a relationship-driven business. I become so full of people, I don't want to deal with people outside. But now, to be effective and be a good marketer of a book, you know, you have to be on Instagram, you have to be on Facebook. So all these kinds of things are new to me as I'm creating this next venture for my life. So, yeah.
Where can people go to find out more about you and, of course, to get Royal Coconut Beach Lunch Club?
Well, it's on Amazon. That's the easiest way. It's not in bookstores yet, except in Palm Beach, the classic bookshop, for anybody who is visiting Palm Beach.
So if you want to come to Palm Beach with a chance to maybe meet the author, even if you get lucky, you can buy the book in bookshops. But
Amazon is the best way to purchase it. And also, it's not in Barnes & Noble, but it's on their website and other retailers online. So that's where it's available now. Unless you want to ask your independent bookstore if they'd like to carry it. I'm all about supporting locals.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. It's a great thing to do.
I think that's so important. So, yeah. And I do have a website. It's my name. And we are just filling it now with all the events I'm doing, including this wonderful radio talk.
Well, good. Good to have you on Too Jewish. Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Yeah.
Diane, mazel tov on the book. All best success here and with future writing. And hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to you when your next book comes out.
I would welcome that opportunity. And I thank you so much for having me today.
The book is called Royal Coconut Beach Lunch Club. It's a lot of fun. It's a great read for this summer, but it also, you know, plays with some very interesting ideas. And I think has some ethical center to it, which I would not say is true for every beach read.
I love that you just said that, the ethical center. I'm writing that down. See?
There you go. I can be a quote on your next book jacket if you want.
That's right. Right. You're spot on. So, way to go.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Larry Goldsmith, author of the new novel, Beshert. And please join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night. Services in Oneg Shabbat, 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, 2, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. Shabbat morning services. Torah reading in Kiddush, live in person and on our Facebook page, and led by me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Our playout this morning comes from the wonderful Israeli Idan Reichel Project and Nasreen Kadri, Eze Yom Tov. Make it a really great day. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
יש ימים לא יכולה לנשום, לילה רודף יום. למצוא מסתור, למצוא מקום, כל מה שבא בא. יבוא אחד, יבוא קרוב.
תישאר איתי לא יעזור, ושישטח לי המזל איזה יום טוב. יש ימים לא יכולה לנשום.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.